We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, the activities of Maharaj Priyavata. It's text 3. The first three verses are the verses that Parikshit Maharaj is asking his questions, and after Sugadev Maharaj is going to answer back. Mahatam Kalu Vipra Uttamashloka Padayo Chaya Nivita Chitanam Na Kutumbe Spiha Mati Matam Kalu Viprashe Uttamashloka Padayo Chaya Nivita Chitanam Na Kutumbe Spiha Mati Mahatam of great devotees, Kalu, certainly, Viparishi, O great sage among the Brahmins, Uttamashloka Padayo, of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chaya, by the shade, Nivita, satiated. Chitanam, whose consciousness, na, never. Kutumbe, to family members. Spriha, mati, consciousness with attachment. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Elevated Mahatmas, who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are fully satiated by the shade of the lotus feet, of those lotus feet. Their consciousness cannot possibly become attached to family members. Responsibly, elevated Mahatmas, who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are fully satiated by the shade of these lotus feet. Their consciousness cannot possibly become attached to family members. Shri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. Purport. Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung Nitai Pada Kamala Koti Chanda Shushitala Yachayaya Jagat Judaya. He described the shade of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda as being as so nice and cooling that all materialists who are always in the blazing fire of material activities may come under the shade of his lotus feet and be fully relieved and satiated. The distinction between family life and spiritual life can be experienced by any person who has undergone the tribulation of living with a family. One who comes under the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord never becomes attracted by the activities of family life. I stated in Bhagavad Gita 2:59, Parantishtu Nivatate. One gives up low engagement when he experiences a higher taste. Thus one becomes detached from family life as soon as he comes under the shelter of the Lord's feet. Mahatam Kaluvi Prashe Uttamashloka Padayo Chaya Nivita Chitanam Nakutumbes Priyamati. Elevated Mahatmas who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are fully satiated by the shade of those lotus feet. Their consciousness cannot possibly become attached to family members. Om Gyana Timandasya Gyananjala Shalakya Chakshu Unmiltam Jena Tasma Shigua Vinamaha Shri Chaitanya Manuvishtam Shtapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Datati Swapadantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shiva Siddhi Go Bhakta Vinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Bhishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nivishesha Shunyavadi Pachati Teshtarine Vanchakalpa Turubhyacha Kripasinyubhyacha Patitanam Pavanibhu Vaishnavi Gurumonuma. So these first three verses are questions, basically, and also statements by Parikshit Maharaj, because he heard that Priyavata was a great elevated soul, always absorbed in the Lord, and then he hears that he's going to get married. So he's saying, how can it be? Because someone who's fully absorbed in spiritual life doesn't have this desire. Really absorbed, like totally transcendental. He doesn't have this attraction to want to be entangled or married and then have children and have to maintain. So that's his question. And he's explaining, in this verse what it says is one who has taken the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, then he's totally satiated. He's so satisfied. Because that's the trick in spiritual life. You have to replace something by something else. Prabhupada says that if a child is bad, if you just tell him, don't do this, it's not going to work. We don't work on negative. We work on positive. Do this. And when you do this, then the rest goes away. We don't tell people, stop smoking, stop doing this. We tell them, chant. And then when they chant, they take prasad, they associate, gradually the taste comes, and naturally they want to give up. That's the highest principle. So that's why he has doubts, and he's asking his spiritual master that, how is it? So the Christians, when we preach to the Christians, sometimes they tell you it's not, because we tell them, you know, we should follow certain principles, you should eat certain things. So they tell you it's not by what you do, it's not what you eat, it's by the mercy of the Lord. And they're right. Prahlad Maharaj confirms this. He says, by the mercy of the Lord. It doesn't mean that we do, you know, foolish activities, like you, Jesus Christ takes your sins and then you sin more. So it doesn't mean that we don't have to follow principles, but it ultimately it all depends on the Lord. It all depends on the mercy of the Lord. One has to try to please the Lord. I don't know if you remember in Kapiladev's pastime, Mother Devotee asked a lot of questions, and Kapiladev was so happy, and he smiled. And Prabhupada in the purport says, oh, if Krishna smiles at you, everything's perfect. He smiled, it's in the verse. It says that Kapila smiled at his mother. So if Krishna looks at you kindly and lovingly, everything's resolved. I mean, he's the supreme master of everything. So he's going to take you and do he can do anything he wants. Many times I joke, we have a devotee in Alachua, Ambarish Prabhu, which I'm sure you know, the great grandson of Alfred Ford. So I tell him he should adopt me because he's very rich. So if someone has a lot of money and takes care of you, what is the problem? So if Krishna smiles at you and cares for you, what is the problem? Because the ultimate is to please Krishna. Krishna will arrange everything. The problem is our faith. Our faith is many times quite weak. Bhaktisiddhanta told us that it's not, don't try to see, but try to act in such a way that Krishna sees you. And this pastime of Krishna, you know this pastime when Krishna had a headache? So he told Narada Muni that, I have a headache. So Narada Muni said, what can I do? He says, I want some dust of the lotus feet of the devotees. So he went everywhere. People said, you're crazy. I'm not going to give dust to put on Krishna's feet. I'm going to go to hell. So when he went to the gopis said, sure, no problem here. Take. So Narada Muni said, you're not afraid to go to hell? Go to hell. If Krishna's headache, go away. So that's okay for us. We can go to hell. Like at the end of Chaitanya Charitamrita, what does Radharani say? That if not, I'm not happy, my unhappiness makes Krishna happy, that's my happiness. Maybe I'm not happy, but it makes him happy, that makes me happy. So ultimately, what we do or what we don't do all depends on Krishna. When we tell people we don't eat meat, they say, you're vegetarian. We're not really, we're vegetarians, but if Krishna told us to eat meat tomorrow, we would eat meat. Because we do what Krishna wants. We're Krishnaites. We're not vegetarians, Krishnatarians. Whatever Krishna wants us to do, this is what we're going to do. So I like this chapter because it really gives a stab at the heart of the speculative devotee or follower that thinks he can determine what he should do to make spiritual advancement, which is an illusion in one sense, because ultimately, like in the story, if you, in Shiva Sangan, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had his famous pastimes of chanting, a lot of people wanted to come and see the pastimes. So we have the story of the Brahmin who was living on milk. So he begged to Shivas that you please allow me to come in. Shiva said, because you know Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gets very upset. He had brought his mother-in-law once there. So he let him in, but he said, you hide there, just there. So the pastime was going on. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was chanting the ecstasy of the devotees, and then he stopped. He says, something's wrong. Someone is here that should not be here. So Shiva started trembling. He said, no, nothing. He says, I'm going to destroy the world, the universe. So he said, okay, there's a Brahmin, but he's really nice. He just lives on milk. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became angry. He says, you think that just by, because you do some austerities and you're just drinking milk, that you can understand the Lord and develop bhakti? Just because you're doing this? So ultimately it's not the activity that one does, it's really the pleasing of the Lord that will satisfy, that will actually liberate us or free us from material existence. You may do so many things. We can try hard and hard, but if we don't please Guru and Krishna, there'll be no results ultimately. So what did Arjuna do? He was speculating so much, right? Arjuna was lusty. Many times we think lust is just, you know, woman. Lust means we want to enjoy separate from Krishna. I have some desires and I want to enjoy separate. I'm lusty. So what did Arjuna want to do? He didn't want to follow Krishna's instruction. And from a moral point of view, he was right. Better he don't fight. Better millions of people don't die just for his brother to become king. Better the ancestors don't die. I mean, all the older people. Better the women get protected. Better there be no unwanted progeny. Then the world is good. I mean, think about it. That's a lot better. But he was so disturbed. He was crying. He was sweating. His bow was falling from his hand. Prabhupada says that these symptoms are also symptoms of ecstasy. But in the case of Arjuna, they came from material attachment. They didn't come from ecstasy. So finally, he told Krishna, he says, what should I do? So then, and also we see it in Vishwan Chakravarti Thakur's explanation. He told him that, you're a kshatriya, you meant to fight. Even if you start begging because you don't have a kingdom and you have to live, you're going to, when you see a beggar that is being abused, you're going to start fighting because you want to protect him, because that's what you are. You're a protector, you're a king, you're an administrator, you know, you're a fighter. So just do it here instead of doing over there. You're going to do it in any case, so just fight here. Do what you're supposed to do, do your duty. So if you look at Priyavrata Maharaj, it's great. I mean, he wants to become a sannyasi. What's the best? He doesn't want to get married, he doesn't want to get entangled. That's good, that's great. I mean, if someone wants to make spiritual advancement, we encourage them. But here, he's being asked that, no, you should get married. So, even Narada Muni was definitely telling Priyavrata, what you want to do is good. He likes when people become sannyasis. We remember in Daksha's stories, Daksha had many sets of sons. The first set, Narada Muni made them sannyasis. So, Daksha got quite angry, because obviously what he needs is to make progeny. His goal is fill the world, the universe. But what did he do? Narada Muni took thousands of his sons and made them sannyasis. What a problem, because they can't have children. So he got angry and he started again. He made more thousands of sons. And what did Narada Muni do? He made them sannyasis again. Oh, Daksha was angry. He was telling him that these kids, they have to go through the system. That's how they make advancement. They have to become Grihasthas. They have to learn how to renounce. Then they become sannyasi. We shouldn't be artificial. So Narada Muni, he likes when people become sannyasi. So when Swamprabha Manu came, his brother, he said, forget it, he's going to take sannyas. So he encouraged his disciple Priyavrata. But then when Lord Brahma came, because Manu went to his daddy, and daddy came. So even at that point, Narada Muni gave up his attachment of his disciple becoming sannyasi. He gave it up. Even though Narada Muni is Narada Muni, and he knows the ultimate is you should become sannyasi, but he knows that above this is to follow the instructions of the Lord. So even Narada Muni gave up. There's a verse, I think 19, it's further down. Oh, a lot further. I think it's 19. One second. It says, this is Lord Brahma telling him that accept, he tells Priyavrata that accept material enjoyment. Think about it. Lord Brahma is saying, accept material enjoyment. He says, because the Lord extraordinarily has ordered you to do this. So Krishna is telling, I want you to get entangled because we need to manage the universe, and Swamprabhu Manu has to do his thing and become renounced. It's his turn to become renounced, it's your turn to become entangled. And who is he saying this to? Priyavrata, who wants to renounce everything. It doesn't make sense. But from this point of view it makes sense. Because ultimately pleasing Krishna is the ultimate thing. We can do so many things. We can be the best distributors, we can be the best pujaris, we can give so much money, but ultimately if we don't please, it's not going to work. And then he says, you will thus always be liberated from material association and be able to carry out the Lord's order in your constitutional position. So he's telling him that you're going to become a grihasta, you're going to become entangled, but ultimately you will be protected. That's what he's telling him in this way. So it's not the object, or it's not the activity. Everything is neutral ultimately, because ultimately everything's good, because everything comes from Krishna. Nothing can be bad. Once in a train, I think the train driver, whatever, asked Prabhupada, what is evil? I don't know if you know this story. So Prabhupada said, the back of Krishna. So everything is Krishna, but if you misuse it, it becomes bad. But ultimately everything is good. A knife you can kill, you can cut bread, even killing is good. The Bhagavad Gita states, obviously Prabhupada makes a comment that it's not like you start killing everyone, but Arjuna's killing was good. It was moral. Actually, it says that when Arjuna was shooting his arrows, it was like Krishna shooting directly through him. It was actually Krishna shooting the arrows, because he was such a clear instrument of Krishna that Krishna was doing it all through him. He let him use his body, use his activities, and Krishna was acting through him. This is the perfection of life, to become the instrument. Prabhupada was an instrument. So even killing is not bad. So that, therefore we question the question of morality that we have. Like Pilad, what did he do? Nisingadev killed his father and he garlanded his father. Imagine killing. Someone kills your father, even if you don't like the guy, generally you wouldn't go and say, thank you for killing my father. Huh? It's not moral. Sometimes I think, how did he garland Nisingadev? Because Nisingadev was so huge. I don't know if Nisingadev reduced or something. When we established Nisingadev in Mayapur, the Brahmins who helped ISKCON to establish the Nisingadev said that Prahlad would have to be a speck, because Nisingadev was touching the sky. Prahlad was here. So how we garland his father, I don't know. It's one of the mysteries that we'll discover once. But anyways, he garlanded his father. So that's not moral. Think about it. He's garlanding the killer of his father. So if you tell people that we worship Nisingadev and he is this boy garlanding the one who killed his father, they'll think that's not so good. Because morality is what Krishna wants. Morality is not what we think is good. It's what we want. It's like yesterday during Jai Pataka Maharaj's Vyas Puja, I was saying how Jai Pataka Maharaj, when he came to Montreal to serve Prabhupada, Prabhupada sent him to get a job at the AP grocery store. Well, you can think what they do at the grocery store and what they sell. It's like Shivananda Prabhu, this old Prabhupada disciple. He was in Montreal for a long time, but he was in Germany. So when he joined, before joining, he gave up his job. When he joined, they told him, get a job. I just gave up material life. No, spiritual life means serving Krishna. Krishna needs this now. So it's a total paradigm shift. You know about the paradigm shift? Srila Swami is the first one who brought this paradigm shift idea in ISKCON, how to shift. Haibo. And he gave the example of the Swiss, the famous Swiss watches. So when the Japanese came and told the Swiss, here, we have digital watch, they said, we'll never work. They lost the market to the Japanese because everyone's doing digital, because they just couldn't shift. So we have to learn how to shift by Krishna's desire. And that's very difficult, because when we have, I remember when I got married, I told my guru, I have to get married, it's going to help. Then after getting married, I started complaining. She says, I thought you would be peaceful when you get married. That's what you told me. So we have these ideas in our mind of what things should be done in a certain way. But ultimately, whatever Krishna says, this is, or the guru, or the Vaishnavas, this is what is right. It's a false conception of morality. Like Krishna was dancing with married women. So if you tell that to people, you know, when my mother looks at Krishna and the gopis, he say, come on, you know, it's not too good. You know, this boy dancing with all these ladies. And they were all married, so think of it, it's not moral. He had 16,000 wives, obviously it was before, but still. And then he's dancing with all these married ladies, and his favorite is a married lady. Obviously, we understand it's a pastime, it's transcendental, but from a mature perspective, it's not moral. Krishna promised that he wouldn't take arms on the battlefield. But when Uttara was attacked and Parikshit Maharaj was going to die, he took the Brahmastra to protect him. That's why he's called Parikshit, because he saw the Lord. He observed, and all his life he was looking for the Lord. So there's this verse. I mean, Prabhupada says that Krishna likes better to be known as Bhakta Vatsal, means a lover of his devotee, than a moralist. But Krishna doesn't like moral. He likes relationships with his devotees, his love. So ultimately, whatever Krishna says, that is right. So what the verse is saying is that ultimately, if you take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, then you'll never be in a difficult situation. You can be anywhere you want. You can be a manager, because sometimes devotees have this problem. They said, oh, I don't want to become a manager because I get entangled. There's a joke that Kalakanta Prabhu used to tell the GBC. There was a horse, and the horse didn't want to move, so the owner said, move, move. He wouldn't move. So this devotee says, I'll speak to him. So he said something in the ears of the horse, and the horse got scared and moved. What did you tell him, Prabhu? I told him, if he doesn't move, we'll make him a president in ISKCON. Because presidency is not like before. Before they used to eat your remnants, touch your feet, worship you. In the beginning. Not anymore. Now you have to. There was a joke, but that's not a joke. In LA, the temple president, once his son got hit by a car, so he ran there, and then one devotee came to him, Prabhu, I need some toothpaste. So even in management position, if someone takes the instructions of the guru, he will not fall down, whatever position he may be. Because sometimes for sannyasis, sometimes for brahmacharis, to take management position is dangerous, because they have to associate. It's like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't want to associate with kings, because within the whole story of Pratabhudra, because they attached to women and money, or wealth and, you know, enjoyment. So obviously being as a brahmachari or being as a sannyasi is more dangerous. But if one takes shelter of the Lord and feels the cooling effect of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, or the Lord, then he won't be affected. But that takes faith. That means that we have faith in the instruction. That means that we don't leave our mind and deviate from the instruction. That is very difficult. It's actually very simple to just surrender, ultimately. It's less complicated. But it's tough for us, because we're so used to speculation and determining what is good for us. We make our own plans all the time. We're always thinking what I do, what I will do, how I will do, you know. But here it says, so basically he's saying Priyavata, because Priyavata in one verse says, I'm like a monkey in the hands of a woman. But obviously he was totally transcendental. He had no attachment at all. He was totally, but he took that position to satisfy the Lord and his father and grandfather. You know, he took it in this way. But sometimes this detachment that is explained here, because it says one who's tasted or felt the cooling effect of the shade of the lotus feet of the Lord, he has no attraction to family. And it's true. And this is how we should be. But it doesn't mean that we become not caring or not loving. In 1996, Lokanath Maharaj came back from the Geneva GBC meetings in Delhi, and he said, the new motto is, love your family, love your wife, and love your kids. That's true. Because before, obviously, there was, for a man to take care of his children, a few years ago, a long time, it was little Maya. You know, you should be detached, Prabhu. Huh? So this conception of this false, this artificial renunciation. When Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati came to Vrindavan, you said Bhaktisiddhanta was the first one sannyasi to drive in cars, have watches, sewn quarters. So the sannyasis told him that, Maharaj, you should be a little renounced. Oh, he says, I came here to teach you renunciation. Yeah, Yukta Vairagya, that you use it in Krishna service. So ultimately everything is good. How do we use it? So the devotee is expert in relationship. That's the weird thing about it. I mean, about our original misunderstanding. We have six loving exchanges, but when it came to family, we didn't exchange with the wife, we didn't exchange with the kids, because, I have to be renounced. detached. Well, that's what the 12th chapter says, that it's not one who lights no fire or does no activities. No, that's not what I want. You have to engage in my service. So it doesn't mean this renunciation that there's no feelings. If you look at the ITV old Indian movies like Harsh Chandra and all this, you see the loving exchange between the husband and the wives and the children. It doesn't mean that they engage in gross sense enjoyment, but there's this exchange, this loving exchange that is there. So it doesn't mean that I give up everything just because I'm renounced. But what it says is that we should keep everything in perspective. That yes, now I'm taking care of my family, I'm taking care of my kids, I have a relationship. But it doesn't mean that I give up everything just for that relationship. And that's is where the false conception comes from. That I'm thinking I'm becoming renounced, so I'm giving up everything in this way. So just to summarize, the first three verses are the verses which are Maharshi Parikshit's questions. He's a little confused. Obviously, he's confused for us, not for him. He knows it all already. That how is it that Priyavata is such an advanced soul and he got into family life? It doesn't make sense because you shouldn't be attached. I mean, if he's taking the cool shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, he shouldn't be attached. And then we discuss how this chapter really hits at the heart of the speculator, the follower, who speculates that just what he wants, this is what is good. And that ultimately, realization comes from doing what Krishna wants, pleasing Krishna. He's the one who's going to give it to us. He's the one who's going to bring us. The modes of nature are impossible to overcome. The Gita says this. But if you take shelter of me, then you can. So it's never by our own endeavors. But still, it's not this understanding that some Christians may say that it's not by what you do, then we can do anything we want. You still have to follow principles. But ultimately, you may do so many things. You may be the greatest scholar. And Prabhupada, their disciples, they were such great scholars. But they offended. To one of his disciples, he says, who offended him, who found another guru, he told him that I hope that for millions of lifetimes you won't find a guru. Oh yeah, because he asked him, let me find a guru. So that is not the way to do. You may be so intelligent, but ultimately the intelligence comes from Krishna, and ultimately Krishna is the one giving. So one takes shelter, he'll be protected anytime, any circumstances, but he still has to do his duty. The whole Bhagavad Gita is duty, duty, duty. Do your duty. And through the duty, one becomes purified. And through purification and surrender, one becomes protected in this way. Any questions, comments? I have some time for comments and questions. Nothing? Gopal is expert in questions because Gopal Krishna Maharaj, especially in the beginning, if you didn't ask a question, he would say, you have to ask questions. He says, don't be sleepers. So he would force his disciples to always ask questions. So the disciples always thinking, what question am I going to ask? Go. No, that was separate. When I said positive, I meant that it's not like we tell people when they come, we don't tell them stop doing this, we engage positively, right? But how do you connect both? I didn't connect both. Yeah. That would be good. I would love that.
People come to only give them positives, but the reality is that we also give them things we also tell them don't.
It doesn't mean only, but generally we try to be positive. Like Prabhupada said, if the child is doing something bad, you put him in the corner, it's not going to help. But if you tell him, do this, or let's say he wants to eat something and you give him some pakoras or samosas, then he'll be better engaged. Go on. I'm sorry, just clarifying. But how can our bad behavior be accepted as the mercy of the Lord? Because, I mean, through the Guru and the Dhammasvi, the Guru and the Vaishnavas, Prabhupada said that even the disciples, the older disciples of the Guru, are Gurus for us. It's difficult when your Guru leaves the planet. It's happening now. It happened to the Prabhupada disciples. So, but still, it's not just Guru Diksha, Shiksha. There's so many Shikshas. So, through them, we'll understand what is good. But I don't understand how the negative can be Krishna's mercy. Oh. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, I understand. Oh, in a positive light. Oh, I understand what you're saying. I thought the bad things was also pleasing the Lord. Oh.
So the regulations, they're also...
Yes.
They perform, so the don'ts also perform as a pleasing.
Correct. Yeah. No questions? Good? Yes, Prabhu.
Well, I've come across quotes recently that say, accept too many responsibilities, we may become burdened with them, and sometimes we feel the pressure of that burden.
Say that again, if we accept what?
If we accept a lot of responsibility,
oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And we try to do something which is quite ambitious, let's say, but we might feel burdened with it. And sometimes we may feel that burden quite heavily. And the suggestion is therefore we might be taking on too much.
Mm.
How do we know when we're taking on too much in the wrong way? And what should be our attitude towards
the pressure
we feel when we take on? Should we think I've taken on too much, or should we think that's okay, I'm taking on this pressure, I'm not feeling comfortable with it, and I'm doing it for Krishna?
Well, there's two things. One has to know how to balance his amount of faith, because what we're saying here is one who has full faith in the Lord. There's in one tape, Prabhupada says that, I like better you tell me you can't do it than the next day go away. So the Guru's going to tell, do this, but ultimately if you can't, tell him I can't. My mind's freaking out. So how do we know? Is generally, if you don't have time for chanting, reading, associating devotees, immature desires are popping out in your mind like crazy because, you know, your mind is like too much, you know? So then you know it's too much. So therefore you have to find it. Well, it's difficult because when you have responsibilities, there's a pressure from the top. And then, but you have to know how to protect yourself. And generally that's what senior devotees should do, or what the leaders should do. The leader should understand that the devotee is burdened. What should I do to help that person to alleviate? That's what the responsibility of the father or the mother or the leader should do. They should understand and not just say, oh, you take it, whatever happens, you know. But personally, you should know your limits, because it's not that I have to surrender, that's the goal, but then the next day you bloop, you go away, you know. You really have to, it really depends. I mean, we preach the highest, but ultimately it depends on how advanced we are. So we surrender gradually every day, we try. And certain things, I mean, it's like Prabhupada was preaching to Brahmateta in his, you know, the Bob Cohen questions and answers. So he said, I can't eat spicy. I get sick. He said, Prahlad Maharaj ate poison. So, prasad. But ultimately, he says, well, if you're not like Prahlad Maharaj, then don't eat the spice. You know, it depends on your constitution also. So Krishna consciousness is very logical. And it's a very intelligent process. It's not a blind following. Obviously, when you join and you accept your guru, then you should not blind follow, but, you know, try to give up the burden of questioning all the time and have faith, because you're seeing it's working. But still, I mean, you have to take care of yourself. So generally, you have authorities that would take care of you. Now it's more difficult if we live outside and, you know, then we burden ourselves with material activities. Then we become burdened ourselves. But ultimately, the authorities should help, and ultimately we should know our balance and our limits. That's my understanding. That makes sense? It's a very very nice process. But it's a very... Prabhupada said it's easy for simple-minded, but we're very complicated in the mind. We're always thinking more, more, more. It's very simple. You get up in the morning, you chant your rounds, go to Mangalati, and do whatever you have to do. You have a job, you go to work. You know, the problem is when you have a job, if you didn't chant, you come back at night, don't feel like chanting, you watch TV, you know, eat a little too much. Next morning is very difficult to get up because there's all these worries, you know. But we have to understand that all these worries will get go away if we just close the eyes and chant. Chanting is really, I mean, when you chant, it's cooling. You can just chant and shh, you know. You can just cool yourself, and that's a cooling effect. But it's difficult to cool yourself as your mind's going everywhere, you know. So ultimately, you have to find that situation that is good for you. Ultimately, you want to become Krishna conscious. So people may say so many things, but you have to find that association that will inspire you, that will enthuse you to make spiritual advancement. Someone may say you should stay here, but I'm dying. So obviously, I mean, if you're good, Vaishnavas will help, but ultimately, what am I going to do? I may be doing this, but in the back I may be doing so many sinful activities. I may be a temple president, but in the back I'm doing stuff because my mind is just too much for me. So it's really a personal process. It's a person-to-person process. It's not a blank formula for everyone. The formula is the same, but it all depends on your level of advancement. You know, if you dig a hole and you put mud in it again, it's so easy to dig again. But when you come to the level where you didn't dig before, it becomes very difficult. So some people, they made a lot of advancement in previous life. And oh my gosh, they're going so fast. But that's because they're just digging the sand out that they've dug. But when they hit the bottom that they didn't dig, that's when you see them struggling. So we don't want to compare ourselves to others. We want to compare to ourselves to us. How was I yesterday? How am I today? How am I tomorrow? Well, I'm advancing. Okay, that's good. It may not be like this devotee who's chanting 64 rounds and sleeping 2 hours a day, but it's a lot better than what I was doing yesterday. I'm getting free from the material desires, I'm advancing. So we have to compete with ourselves, because it all depends where we at spiritually. We're all different. And gradually, if we take the process properly and renounce, gradually everything will come. Anything else? Thank you very much. It's very beautiful here. I like it. I'm originally from Europe, but in America, everything's the same. When you go in a city, it's all first the motels, then it's all the same. Sometimes I was in a city and I told my wife, I said, I think we came here before, but we never came, but it was very similar in another city. It's very, but here at least there's so much charm, you know. I just remember, because I was born in France, so we used to travel a lot, but very, very peaceful. It's like haven here. Thank you, August Prabhupada, Hare Krishna.